Hi, I'm Mark Webber, and this is Keeping Track.
You're listening to Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix. In this week's episode, we review the final three European races of the Formula One season. Cam McConville drops by to dissect some of the sport's biggest issues. And Australian Sam Michael joins us to discuss McLaren's big push for the World Championship. There's all that and more on Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix.
Hello and welcome to Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix. Matt Clayton with you for episode 15 of the show, where we'll take a look back at the final three European races of this year's 20-round Formula One season. Joining me in the studio is our regular co-host, well, he's been back twice, so we'll call him regular, Cam McConville. Welcome back.
Thanks very much for having me. Looking forward to the winding down the European season.
It's amazing to think we are at the end of the European season. Before we talk about the main talking points to come out of those last three races, let's just have a quick recap of the results. The recap looking pretty good if you're a McLaren fan, because they've now won the last three Grand Prix. In Hungary, just before the mid-season break, we had Lewis Hamilton winning that race from pole, Kimi Raikkonen and Romain Grosjean rounding out a podium for Lotus. In Belgium, a month later, after a break, we had Jenson Button also winning from pole at Spa. Sebastian Vettel second, Kimi Raikkonen again on the podium in third. And last weekend at Monza, Lewis Hamilton, a dominant victory for McLaren from pole. Sergio Perez, another one of the special Sauber races, one stop, conserving the tyres beautifully, started 12th, finished 2nd. And Fernando Alonso, a great recovery drive from a horrible qualifying, 10th on the grid, ended up finishing 3rd. So plenty of talking points to come out of those three races. But Cam, to start off with, the main talking point in my eyes, the first corner accident in Belgium, triggered, I think, a little bit by Pastor Maldonado jumping the start by about half a minute.
Yeah.
And then Romain Grosjean and Lewis Hamilton coming together in the first corner. The hairpin there at La Source, we end up with Hamilton, Grosjean, Alonso and Sergio Perez all out of the race within the first 15 seconds. Now, Grosjean gets a one-race ban and a €50,000 fine, which is about 20 cents to you and me, for causing that. But you had an interesting spin. You don't think he's completely at fault.
Look, I know he's got priors, but, you know, from a driving standards perspective, I think he was massively hard done by, because at the end of the day, an accident is, or a crash, is never just one party. Okay, occasionally, if someone comes in massively late under brakes, gets it all wrong. But in Formula One level, that very rarely happens. So you've never got 100% and 0% blame in an incident. Now, sure, he came from the left side of the road to the right, but this happens in Formula One at the starts all the time. They're zigzagging left, right, you know, using their superior reflexes and sometimes luck. He went from the left to the right side. Lewis had momentum, no doubt. He had a pretty good, clean start. But at what point does Lewis need to relinquish and lift off the throttle just to survive the first corner? And if the guy's the form driver, which clearly, and we'll talk about that today, that McLaren are the form team at the moment, you've got to get through the first corner. Yes, he had overlap, but he could have lifted off to avoid the accident, in my opinion.
No, I do agree with you. I think the key thing you said there was that Grosjean had form. This is the seventh time this year that he's been involved in some sort of first lap incident. Not all of them his fault, but I think the stewards took that into account. Clearly, a couple of them have been his fault, and that's why they whacked him pretty severely for it. Incidentally, we mentioned Pastor Maldonado before. Nice little stat for you. Since he won the Spanish Grand Prix in round 5, he has scored 0 points, and he's had 6 penalties. So not really a scoreline that you want, is it?
It was interesting watching that, because I was sitting there, and sometimes the lights on your screen there are a bit delayed, you know, to what's obviously happening at the circuit. So I thought, has he just had to let the clutch go? The car's slipping. What is going on there? Or is everyone else asleep? Clearly, it was a ridiculous false start. Obviously, it took out Alonso. It was a massive crash. Fernando was very lucky that he wasn't seriously injured in that incident. That's the first thing. Secondly, they've set a pretty interesting precedent with suspensions. Are we going to see more drivers sitting out Grand Prix like we see in football codes around the world. It's a pretty hefty penalty, and watch this space to see what happens going forward, I suppose.
Well, it was interesting to find that's the first time a driver has been parked for an incident during a race since Mika Häkkinen in 1994. Michael Schumacher got suspended for a couple of races in 94 for ignoring black flags at British GP, but Mika Häkkinen caused an accident in 94. It's been that long, but you're right. I mean, particularly in a tense championship situation like we find ourselves in, are we going to have guys parked?
Yeah, I don't like to see it. They obviously wanted to make a statement. This kind of the carnage that it caused, they obviously viewed it that it was mainly his fault. And I agree, the weaving when there's a car that's got overlap is unnecessary. You can't squeeze a guy off the road at that speed. But at what point do you avoid the crash and just button off the throttle a bit and then argue about being squeezed later as opposed to arguing about it in the fence, which happened to Lewis? From a V8 supercar where I've come from perspective, we've never seen it. And, you know, it could kind of ruin guys' careers by sitting them out on the bench. Someone else comes in, does a great job. Suddenly, their job's on the line. Sure, they need to think about it, but it's a pretty dangerous precedent being set by Formula One and the FIA.
What was interesting is that three of the four guys whose races in Belgium ended in the first corner were actually on the podium at Monza, which is quite interesting. So things worked out quite well for them a week later. Speaking of Lewis Hamilton and McLaren, they've won three races in a row now. He's now second in the World Championship. He was 62 points behind Fernando Alonso three races ago. It's back to 37, and McLaren do seem to have the quickest car. Is he the guy that can potentially take the championship fight? Do you think there's enough races left?
If he stays off Twitter, keeps his head clean, and we can go there in a moment. But, without a doubt, McLaren's got the fastest car at the moment. Red Bull's going nowhere rapidly, unfortunately, for our Mark and Seb. And Fernando is just racing him. He's using his race smarts to keep in the championship hunt. But the man, if he can keep his head right and keep the politics right, Lewis Hamilton is certainly the one that I think can take it all the way to the final round.
Now, you mentioned Twitter. I can't wait to get your spin on this. You've worked for a number of teams over the years. Not that Twitter existed back when you started. Sorry to show your age up there. But
That's right.
How do you think a team would respond if you or another driver in that situation was putting pictures of telemetry up on social media? Okay, yes, it got taken down after it got wrapped across the knuckles. So many people have got that. There were rival team engineers that were just rubbing their hands together thinking, how good is this? Pretty extraordinary, really, wasn't it?
Well, Ron Dennis, I'm tipping you, he doesn't go to every Grand Prix now, but Ron would have just fallen off his director's chair back there at McLaren Technologies because they're a conservative team. I mean, if you look at all the teams, I'd say along with Ferrari, they're pretty conservative. Martin Whitmarsh would have a coronary. Look, Lewis was the golden child. However, with all this talk about Mercedes, which we can discuss as well, I think he's got to be pretty careful. I think it was a stupid thing to do. You have in your contract in any motor racing, IP, intellectual property, all that is so tightly held. And at Formula One, it's just magnified. So I don't think he thought about it. He thought that it was probably good for his Twitter followers. And social media is dangerous for any athlete at the moment. And that is the first we've seen of it in Formula One.
And won't be the
that
last.
I know of, anyway.
And it certainly won't be the last. Now, you mentioned the Mercedes thing. Eddie Jordan has come out in the last couple of weeks and says that Hamilton has agreed terms, in inverted commas, with Mercedes, whatever that means. It's interesting in these negotiations with McLaren. It's hard to imagine that he would go anywhere else. The two Red Bull seats are filled. You can't imagine him ever being Fernando Alonso's teammate again after what happened in 07. So if he wants to stay with a winning team, McLaren at the moment seems to be the place to stay. I'm wondering here, in 2014, Formula One goes to a new engine formula, and I certainly think the works teams are going to steal a bit of a march on the customer teams. I wonder if that's part of his thinking, or is it just greater freedom, more ability to do things on Twitter? I mean, what's going through his head, I wonder?
Or he's not the favourite Brit in the British team anymore. You know, I think Jensen just slides under the radar. I think he's very strong-minded, but doesn't necessarily exude it. He doesn't need to. He's got so much confidence. I think he's very well liked in the UK. And I just think Lewis has developed that love or hate sort of style about him already, quite early in his career. I think Norbert Haug is of Mercedes, I think, is a big fan of Lewis. I think he'd be silly to go on current form, but maybe he knows something that we don't. I don't think he'll go. And I just question also, what does Eddie Jordan know? I mean, you know, how connected is he to the whole German company.
Mm.
So it's an interesting one. But I can't see him going. I just think the grass is always greener and very rarely is it.
No, very true. The interesting thing with Jensen, I think he just plays it very cleverly as well. He has a fuel pressure problem and loses a certain podium in Monza last weekend. Doesn't bitch and moan on the radio. Very, very calm. Look, it's an unfortunate thing. These things happen. And then 3 nights over the Monza weekend, takes the mechanics out to the local pizzeria and just mucks in with the boys. That sort of stuff just goes so far, doesn't it?
It does. Look, I mean, if you want instant PR, you put someone like Lewis into your team. If you want someone that wins your championships consistently, you want Fernando Alonso or Jenson Button. They're the two that just go about their craft week in, week out. Don't create a storm. And have got, you know, I think also Jensen, he's just very easy on a car, very easy on the tyres, and it lends himself to winning championships. But I think Lewis has got the bit between his teeth, and he's certainly the man to take it to Alonso.
Now, we mentioned Hamilton's now second in the championship. The man who was second, Mark Webber, has now dropped back to fifth. He's had a pretty horrendous run of races, Mark, just 16 points in the last four races since he re-signed with Red Bull after winning the British Grand Prix. Had a DNF at Monza. It's always been a bogey track for him. He's now 47 points behind Alonso. Absolutely no momentum. Do you think he's out of it, Cam, at this point?
Yeah, 100% he's out of it. I can't see him finishing in the top three now. I think he's going to end up fourth in the championship, which is a shame because he was looking so good before Europe, really, about four or five Grand Prix ago. Look, what happened in Monza, who knows? I mean, you know, the flat spots and all this sort of stuff to obviously park the car to save kilometres on the car, I don't know. But he's just, his starts are still atrocious. And, you know, they say that races are not won in the first lap, but he's certainly losing a lot of them by dropping back to absolutely nowhere. And we know that it's just so competitive when you've got a Sauber up the front now. You know, you've got the Lotuses up the front. It's just, where has Mark's race form gone, which is usually his strength? Qualifying's not, and he's just racing to nowhere at the moment.
Well, it's interesting too that Red Bull, that massive downforce advantage they seem to have in the high-speed corners last year, it means obviously there's been some rule changes. They don't have that anymore. So his ability to recover from a poor qualifying or even a poor first lap has been reduced this year, and I think we're starting to see that.
Yeah, and look, we know that he's got his secure, his future secure in the short term, so you can't say that that's weighing on him. But Seb's got the upper hand again, but of course the reliability issues there, and I don't know what is going on at Red Bull with this componentry failure that they've had twice now. Mark seems to have avoided that, but just clearly doesn't have the pace, and Red Bull, I think, are a little bit lost at the moment.
Now, while we wrap up the European races, just something I want to discuss with you, Cam. There's been an interesting little development with the post-race podiums since the British Grand Prix, where we had Jackie Stewart come out on the podium with a microphone, interviewed the three guys on the podium. All went really well. So Jackie Stewart, obviously a giant of the sport in his home country, that was all fine. German Grand Prix, we had Niki Lauda come out, and that was fine. I could cop that, three-time world champion. In Hungary, we had Placido Domingo come out on the podium with a microphone to interview the three podium getters, one of whom was Kimi Raikkonen, who doesn't say anything anyway,
no.
And then proceeded to sing afterwards. And it seems to be the new thing now. We're bringing someone of some sort of note out onto the podium to conduct something resembling an interview on the podium after the race with people covered in champagne. Your thoughts on this?
It's ridiculous. I mean, it reminds me of my go-kart days when they'd go up and you'd say, yeah, I'd like to thank Mum and Dad and the sponsors. And, you know, it's, you know, Formula One, and hopefully people listening to our podcast are the same. They're Formula One fans, purist motor racers. They're tech savvy. They want to hear the ins and outs of the sport. So they, you know, personally, I used to love sitting there listening to the unilaterals, to the press conferences, whether it's Bob Constanduris and before that Peter Windsor, getting the details. Why did you do that? You know, why did you squeeze that driver off the road? Why did you go for that strategy? But the podium thing, they're clearly trying to make Formula One more of an entertainment show, but it's not working. Because trying to get, as you say, three words out of Kimi, maybe they'd be better getting a flag marshal or a punter out of the crowd. I mean, Domingo, maybe there was no one else available in Hungary. I don't know. That was just bizarre for me.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, clearly the man can sing, but I'm not sure about his Formula One knowledge while speaking in English in front of a crowd in Budapest. That was one of the stranger things this year, I would suggest.
And I know, you know, Channel 10 have been bombarded with what's going on. You know, why can't we see them? Well, they're not doing them. So it's they can't show anything that's not happening. It's the get it all done on the podium, so perhaps they don't have to sit around, whether it's a TV thing, you know, to carry on, because it obviously goes on a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I don't think it's working. You need to give the F1 fans what they want. They want a full rundown, not a quick minute and a half grab on the podium from someone that clearly is not going to write the take the right questions to them in the first place.
What is going to be interesting, of course, we go away to the flyaways now. Who are they going to put on the podium in Korea and Abu Dhabi and India to speak? The mind boggles.
Well, maybe from India they can get someone from Bollywood that perhaps tunes in, you know, and watches Formula One.
I was thinking Sachin Tendulkar could be quite
that
good.
That could be good. Could be a bit of a rev head. In South Korea, who knows? And trying to get someone that perhaps speaks good English in that part of the world. It's all the unknown. I'd be very surprised if they stay with it. But, you know, I don't know. Bernie's obviously having some say in. Perhaps they'll start handing out medals towards the end of the year as well.
Perhaps they will. He's been on about that for a while.
He has.
Now, speaking of the World Championship situation, we have 7 races to go. Fernando Alonso handsomely in the lead, 179 points for Ferrari. Lewis Hamilton second, 37 points in arrears. Kimi Raikkonen 1 point behind Hamilton. Sebastian Vettel 1 point behind Raikkonen. Mark Webber now fifth, 47 points in arrears, as we said, and a long way off. In the constructors, Red Bull 272, lead McLaren 243. And Fernando Alonso's third place, and a very good fourth from Felipe Massa. We shouldn't forget that in Monza, lift Ferrari up to third place. 226 points for them. Lotus 217 with 7 races to go.
Tickets to the GP breakfast of the 2013 Formula One Australian Grand Prix are now on sale. This exclusive breakfast will be held at the Crown Palladium Ballroom on Saturday the 16th of March from 8 a.m. till 11 a.m. Featuring guest appearances from motorsport legends and F1 drivers, it's the perfect way to kickstart your Grand Prix weekend in style. For more information, visit grandprix.com.au.
Don't forget to like the Australian Grand Prix on Facebook for behind-the-scenes news, updates and exclusive opportunities.
This is Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian GP.
McLaren has won the last 3 Grand Prix as we head into the final 7 flyaway races to end the season. And one Australian playing a crucial role in the famed British team is sporting director Sam Michael, who joins us on the line. Sam, welcome to the podcast.
Yes, thank you very much. Thanks for the intro.
Sam, you've been around this sport for a long time now. I'm sure you weren't the only person to look at the start of this year with some confusion with 7 different race winners in 7 races. What can you put that unpredictability down to now you've had a chance to sit back and assess it a little bit?
I think the main thing has been the change in exhaust flow and diffuser rules. For people who know the technicalities of the sport, the exhaust system is used pretty extensively to create downforce at the rear of the car. At the end of last year, they changed those regulations to severely limit that. So the amount of downforce that we get through using exhaust is about 10% of last year. Mm. Now, that might sound like a really technical thing has changed, but it has significantly compressed the field. So the distance between first and, say, 15th used to be around 2.5 seconds, and it's now around 1 second, or even less on some days. So that has been a significant player. The variability in the tyres sometimes comes across as the main reason, but in actual fact, from one year to another, the tyres have had that sort of variability before, but because the teams are at the front have had such an advantage, you didn't stand out as much.
No, it's interesting. I think most people have pointed towards the tyres as being the greatest differentiator, but you think perhaps the change in the downforce regulations has been a bigger thing.
Yeah, it has, because of the as I said before, if a car was on pole by half a second or a second, and then it lost 0.3 during a stint because of its tyres, of course it would get beaten by another car equivalent to it. Like, you know, if you're comparing, say, Red Bull versus McLaren, but it'd still come third or fourth. And the other thing that you really notice is that when the top teams make mistakes, such as Jensen or Vettel in Malaysia, and they drop out the back of the field, then they can't progress back again. So it's extremely difficult for them to cut back through the field. So if you're running first and you have a crash and damage your nose and drop to, say, 12th or 15th, it's very difficult to come back. And that's because all the secondary things that happen in Formula 1, such as losing downforce when you're following other cars, they become first order. Mm. And that's why now, because when the cars are so close together in terms of downforce and drag, it means that being on pole position, for example, is a lot more important than before, because the car's running behind you, they're running with less downforce than you because they're running in your wake.
Now, Sam, you mentioned pole position. McLaren's going the back end of the European season. Great for the team. Three poles and three wins in the last three races. There must be a real sense of optimism at the moment, both for the Drivers' Championship and the Constructors, because there's still a lot of points on the table, isn't there?
There is, and I think now it's a critical point of the championship for us. We're basically coming from behind. We know that we've got a big challenge to try and get the up there in the Constructors. The next race will be important. It's because if you look at the last three, there's various circumstances which may have contributed to our main competitors, such as Red Bull, suffering with performance. One of the most in particular is the lift to drag ratio of the tracks. And we've been to two low drag circuits, Spa and Monza, and those are quite different aero packages compared to what you normally run. Mm. We're now going back to Singapore, which is a maximum downforce circuit, so our performance against Red Bull in Singapore is pretty critical for the championship. If we go there and we still have the same sort of advantage as what we have over the last two, then I'd say that we're in a really strong position to challenge. If Red Bull are quick again and they're on the front row with both cars, then I think it could. It doesn't mean that we can't win the championship, but it will be a lot tougher job.
Absolutely. Sam, obviously your first year with the team this year. Explain to our listeners just what your title of sporting director covers. I'm assuming it's a fairly broad brief. You probably haven't got to the end of it yourself yet.
Yeah, I think it's inside McLaren, things are structured quite different to other teams. But I guess to try and keep it simple for the listeners, as sporting director, I'm responsible for all the racing and testing. And I sit on the senior management group of the company, and that means that I'm involved in pretty much anything that makes the McLaren go better, whether it's from strategy or forward planning or pace or reliability. It doesn't matter what it is. I get involved where you're most useful at the time. But my mainline responsibility is all the racing and the drivers. And then I help out on everything else as well. It's I guess one of the strengths of McLaren. There's a lot of people at the top end that have a lot of strength and depth. People use this word strength and depth, and then you've got to say, well, what is that? What does that mean? What it is in McLaren is there's probably five or six people that have the ability to engage on all those levels. Whether you're talking about how to make the car go faster. What the driver is that you should have, whether you're going to build a new wind tunnel in 3 years' time, what engine you should be running in 10 years' time, what you should be doing for the next Grand Prix for the tyres to make them work better. So there's so much experience here, and it's quite rewarding to work with that, and quite enjoyable, and it's one of those. I don't think I've enjoyed a job as much as what I have in the last 12 months at McLaren. Mm.
I know one thing that the team's been very putting a lot of time into has been the pit stops. We saw Jenson Button stop in Germany that I think you said it was 2.31 seconds on the clock, and that was described as a record. Give us some sort of an idea as to just how much practice and refinement is taking place in the lead-up to a race weekend and on the weekend itself, because it's something that you've really made your own in these last few races to gain those advantages that are so crucial.
That's right. I think there's lots of factors to doing a world record pit stop, and we did that in Germany at the German Grand Prix, the 2.31, and since that time we've been under 2.5 two more times. And I think that there's a lot of things that make it up. The first thing is the technology. You've got to have all the right equipment, and we were on quite a big technology push during this season and introduced five or six new designs as the season progressed. The most interesting thing during the season is the mistakes and problems we were having earlier in the year when we had some poor pit stops had nothing to do with the new technology. So those mistakes were happening with old technology, and they were things that we were basically slow and unreliable anyway. So it was pretty low risk to introduce these new things because they were caused by old equipment. When I say old, I don't mean like worn out equipment. I mean old technology, things that were causing inconsistencies in the stop and were the exact reasons why we were introducing these new parts. So we weren't having mistakes because we were taking risk. And if anything, that helped drive the risk, push us even harder to introduce things quickly. So once we introduced all the technology, and by the time we got to Montreal, we pretty much had everything in place. In addition to that, we work with the English Institute of Sport, who are exactly the same group that work with the Olympic athletes. And once we engage with them, We worked on them to understand how to use our crew, and it's typical to get into the detail and look for those marginal gains. You have to understand how everything works, and we spent a lot of time on there. And I guess that's our there's three or four things in that area, not one thing, that really our what we consider our secret and how we produce those stops, because there's five or six other teams now that have the same technology as us, but they're running 7 or 8 tenths slower than us in a pit stop, and the reason is because of working together as a team, and it's all that area that we keep pretty close to our chest.
Well, there's still that human element, of course. Are we coming close to reaching the realistic limit of what an activity that involves people can actually produce? I mean, there's got to be a finite level at some point, you would think.
There is, but I think we're still a way off that. There's no question that we'll beat that record again next year, during this year, maybe in the next race, because we're consistently running at least 3 tenths quicker than that in practice. So there's no question that we'll see a 2 second pit stop before the end of this year. I'm convinced of that, and then through into next season, I think you might see underneath 2 seconds, and then I think the physical limit that you'll get to is how quick a human can take one wheel off and change it with another one, and all the other processes all just continue to be refined. But yeah, it'll be sub 2 seconds during next year.
I was certainly looking forward to seeing that. I mean, it's such an advantage for the team at the moment. Sam, before I let you go, I mentioned earlier the 7 flyaways coming up. Now, you're a seasoned traveller, as anyone from Western Australia has to be. How does the prospect of 7 races and 3 back-to-backs in 10 weeks or so sit with you? It's pretty crammed, even by Formula One standards. How do you deal with the travelling and the constant time zone changes from what you're doing now?
To be honest, I think it's one of those things you just get used to, and you learn to control jet lag and things like that. When you're at a Grand Prix, you have enough adrenaline with the emotion of a Grand Prix weekend to overcome that anyway. So you've also got fixed time schedules, and you go into them. Singapore, to be honest, is quite easy because it's on the same time zone as England, and then you fly back again. Mm-hmm. But Japan and Korea tends to be pretty tough. But when you do it, it's not like when you turn up on a holiday and then you're allowed to lie in for the day, and then you get all your system really messed up. Mm-hmm. In Formula One, you've got debriefs and meetings and practice sessions. So you're forced to stay awake during the day and operate. And then that pulls you into the time zone very quickly. There's probably more pressure on the mechanics and the technicians to turn things around and get the freight from one Grand Prix, one country to another within 3 days.
Well, it's certainly another interesting subplot as we approach the end of what's been a great season so far. Sam, look, we really thank you for your time on the podcast, and we look forward to catching up with you somewhere down the line.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Don't forget, you can follow the Australian Grand Prix on Twitter at @AusGrandPrix.
Before we wrap up, just a reminder that tickets are now on sale for the 2013 Formula One Australian Grand Prix from March 14 to 17 at Albert Park. Make sure you don't miss the chance to book early and get the best seat in the house to see Mark Webber and Daniel Ricciardo on the grid at their home Grand Prix. Go to grandprix.com.au or call Foxtix on 1800 100 030 to find out more. And that's all we have time for on this edition of Keeping Track. Don't forget to like the Australian Grand Prix on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at @AusGrandPrix, and go to grandprix.com.au, where you'll find details of which big-name international guests are coming up on our next episode. Thanks to Sam Michael and the always wonderful Silvia Hoffa-Frangipani at McLaren, and thank you for listening, and join us again on Keeping Track soon.